Welcome to Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. Very recently, the data coming in from the Ministry of Health has just been released to the public. And of course, our favorite publisher in terms of health and health-related issues, Code Blue, joins us for today's conversation. Bu Su Lin, Editor-in-Chief of Code Blue. Hi, Su Lin. Let's go through into, before the findings, before we jump into the findings, let's understand a little bit about why state by state level data was not published earlier, and what is the significance of us knowing about it now?
So the Ministry of Health started releasing testing data by state the day that the new Prime Minister announced his cabinet. They hadn't been releasing the data for quite some time, even though various medical experts and the media have called for it. So I don't know why they started releasing it, but it's just coincidental that they released it the day that the new cabinet was announced.
And can we make some postulations that this was a directive by the new health minister, Kari Jamaluddin, or is this something that was particularly independent from him being appointed as the new health minister?
Well, I have no idea, but then Khairi Jamaluddin has always been quite transparent when he was handling the vaccination program back at Mosti. So perhaps this could also be the Ministry of Health moving into a direction that's more transparent and accountable to the public. So we welcome it very much, and it's crucial to have state testing data so that we know the true extent of the outbreaks in all the states, because the national positive rate really is just an average of positive rates across the country. So let me just explain that clearly. A positive rate means the share of tests that are positive. So if, say, 100 people are tested for COVID, 30 people have positive results, so the positive rate then is 30%. The World Health Organization has set a benchmark of 5%, maximum 5% positive rate, which the WHO says countries should try to achieve for at least 2 weeks before reopening. Now what we see is that the national positive rate based on the number of tests done, rather than the number of people tested. So the number of tests done comprise both RT-PCR and the antigen rapid test kit. So if you look at the data in the past two epidemiological weeks from August 15 to 21st and August 22nd to 28, the national positive rate is very high. So in the past week from August 22nd to 28, the 7-day average national positive rate is about 14%. The previous week, it was about 13.6%. So that's very high, right? And it's even higher than the Ministry of Health's own standard of 10%. So WHO recommends maximum 5%, but the Ministry of Health believes that 10% or lower is sufficient. And then when you go down to the state level, so this is where you can see the true, just how badly the outbreaks in certain states are underreported.
That's right. Let's just pull up the graphics that have been produced by Code Blue. And the data, of course, is coming in from the Ministry of Health. As you can see on your screen right now, Sabah registers about 25% or 24.29%. Kedah, close to 22%, Kelantan 21%, Perlis 21%, Selangor 17%. All these numbers indicate that we're not testing enough. And we don't know that we weren't testing enough. We had some suspicions that we weren't testing enough, but now we have concrete proof. Now, we're not in the business of pointing fingers. We're not in the business of rectifying what needs to be done. Isn't it obvious right now that reopening the economy is bad, that we need to test more, and that the numbers that have been produced daily diligently by either the Minister of Health or DG Hisham, it does not reflect the kind of positivity rates that is happening right now amongst the community? Does this freak you out, so to speak?
Well, the extremely high positive rates exceeding even 20% in Sabah, Kedah, Kelantan and Perlis, that really is quite shocking to me. And then if you look down closer at the daily positive rates across the past 2 weeks, I mean, Perlis hit as high as 37% on August 28th. So that's really, really high. Whether I think the reopening of the country should be delayed until we get until we get our positive rates down, that I think is quite debatable, Ibrahim, because it's clear that our national economy cannot take months of lockdown to no end. And we have to also bear in mind that the vaccination program is going on really well. Our vaccination rates, vaccine coverage is really high across several states, except for the crisis states like Sabah, Kedah, Kelantan, Johor, and Johor, Penang, Perak. Yeah. So I think the country can reopen, but then we also have to keep in mind that we are not seeing the full extent of the outbreak. So what that means is that we need to put into place, we need to strengthen our other public health measures like testing and contact tracing. And also, Ibrahim, the MOH has previously acknowledged that when the Klang Valley's COVID crisis was at its worst last month, they focused on symptomatic testing, which makes sense because the Ministry of Health does not have endless resources. And when you have a surge of cases just coming into the healthcare system, you want to be able to focus your testing resources on the people who need it most, those that turn up with symptoms. So it makes sense not to test asymptomatic people when the outbreaks are really bad. And we're already seeing that happening in Sabah, in the northern states, Kedah, Perak, Perlis, Penang. Sabah is also badly hit, Johor as well. So I believe that these states are probably only testing symptomatic cases. And I think that can continue. But the testing should also be increased in these states so that we can catch these cases at an early stage of their disease before they deteriorate.
You know, it's surprising that you mentioned some states like Johor, because on the flip side of the graph that has been presented by Code Blue, Johor testing positivity rate is 8.5%, Pahang at about 8%, Putrajaya at about 8.7 or 9%. Isn't this good? Isn't this showing that that the cases there are being tested enough, even though they're testing symptomatic patients? Or is there something else that we need to understand?
So you can say in comparison, Johor and Putrajaya, or those states with less than 10% but still higher than 5% positive rates, they are more accurately capturing the actual extent of their outbreaks compared to the states like Sabah, Kedah, and Kelantan. But it's still above 5% though. So you're still missing out. These Putrajaya, Johor, Pahang are still missing out cases that are not coming into the healthcare system. And Johor's cases are going up still.
Then the big question is, why is it like this? Why is Sabah 25%, Kedah 22%? Can you speculate, or do you know even some facts on why such high positivity rates are there? Is it not enough PCR test kits? Is it what's happening there?
So the positive rates are based on the total number of both PCR and antigen rapid test kits combined, as released by MOH on GitHub. The Sabah authorities have recently complained about problems with a backlog in testing, which isn't new, actually. I mean, we saw this problem back in Sabah late last year during the surge of the epidemic. And the same problem with backlog testing is happening again in Sabah now, except that the epidemic is a lot worse compared to late last year. So the reason for this is just... The reason for the extremely high positive rates just simply means that there are a lot of cases, a lot of infections in the community that are still not being detected because there's just too many. And because of limited resources on testing and contact tracing, more and more people are turning up positive but not being detected by the system.
So the impact, of course, is on the burden on the healthcare system. You and I have been talking about this for 18 months now. But it's even more severe and more pronounced in those states that we've mentioned, in Sabah, in Kedah, where ICU beds are overused, are over capacity. High dependency wards are actually bursting at the seams. And it seems like these states, and I quote you because I think I read somewhere on your Twitter feed that they're paying the price for the operation surge capacity in Klang Valley. So folks in Klang Valley can rest easy knowing that over 110% of us That's another topic that we need to talk about, the denominator of adults in Klang Valley. But, you know, as it stands, over 110% of adults in Klang Valley has received at least a single dose at the expense of these states. I don't know how to feel from this, because on one hand, I am a beneficiary of Operation Surge Capacity. But on the other hand, Malaysia is not out of the woods yet, by a mile actually. So how do we make sense of the allocation of resources when it comes to the vaccination program, when it comes to adults outside of the Klang Valley?
It's really, really tough. I don't, while I believe that states outside the Klang Valley paid the price for Operation Surge Capacity, I also understand why the government made the decision to accelerate vaccination in the Klang Valley last month when the crisis in the Klang Valley was at its worst. I mean, the media was full of images, social media was full of images about of patients lying on floors along the corridors of the hospital. Deaths were going up. So I understand that, I understand why the government chose to vaccinate Klang Valley, because it had no choice. People were dying, right? And the crisis really became full blown in the Klang Valley early to mid last month. And at that time, actually, since late June to early July, states like Sabah, Kedah, Kelantan, Perak, Penang, and Johor, their epidemics were starting to increase. Their cases the cases in those states were starting to increase when the Klang Valley crisis was becoming even worse. Could we have prevented the outbreaks in those six states from worsening to the stage where they are right now if we had deployed vaccines to them instead of the Klang Valley? Possibly, we could have. But then that would mean that the Klang Valley epidemic would just continue worsening. So it's a choice between someone dying in KL or Selangor, or someone dying in Sabah or Kelantan later now.
What kind of options do we have?
It's a very tough situation. So I understand why the government took that approach. So of course, the next question now is with reported vaccine shortages in several states. So we presume that there is limited vaccine supply. Which states now will the government prioritize for vaccination?
Okay, speaking of which, you spoke about this earlier, or at least tweeted about it. See, I'm your number one Twitter fan, actually. I've been outed in this interview. But you said that there was an incongruency previously when KJ had to do the vaccination program, and he is the Minister of Science, and the former Minister of Health was, well, I guess, playing second role or second fiddle to the vaccination program. Now that KJ has the proper mandate to actually execute the vaccination program, it seems that this so-called incongruency of duties is no more, and that the jobs are now aligned and fitting that of the job description, which is extremely crucial, right? I mean, you want the person to do the job, be given the job, and the person that is not going to be held responsible for it to do the other jobs that they're asked to do. With this in mind, do you think that the PIC program, or the vaccination or inoculation program of the country, can be further expedited, considering that KJ is now in the right, holding the right portfolio, or you think that it's going to be going on as per normal, as per what we have seen over the past few months, because the person in charge is still the person in charge before is still the person in charge now? How do you make of this vaccination rollout program in the months to come?
I think the vaccine rollout will continue to be efficient like what it was under KJ when he was a Mosti minister. Just moving the vaccination program to MOH just makes it easy in terms of administration, right? Because vaccine procurement, distribution and administration are all now under the health minister in MOH, as compared to previously when KJ would make the strategic decisions, but then the actual procurement, distribution and administration was done, was managed by the Ministry of Health with medical workers from the ministry and also Protect Health Corporation, a Ministry of Health-owned company. They managed private medical practitioners administering the vaccines. The problem now really though seems to be a vaccine supply issue. So that will be the main hindrance to our vaccination program moving forward. And crucially also that hits us at a time, not just at a time when a lot of states have vaccination rates below 50% of their total populations, but we see outbreaks, we see a severe outbreak happening now in Sarawak, which has vaccinated more than half of their total population. And we don't know why there is such a stark difference between the epidemic in Sarawak and the epidemic in Labuan, both of which have similar vaccination rates, more than 60% of their total population. So whether that requires, whether Sarawak's situation shows the need for booster jabs is something that the government is going to have to decide.
Speaking of which, we haven't really did talk about Labuan. Labuan seems to be the star state that needs to be discussed. Their positivity rate is 1%. Their total vaccination rate amongst adults is extremely high at 80% against total population. They haven't even gone to the teenagers yet, and it's still above 60%. But the thing about Labuan is that the denominator is actually quite small. They are perhaps the smallest territory to speak of. But it still shows to the rest of the country that we can emulate this kind of numbers in terms of vaccination rates, in terms of positivity rates and testing rates. Do you feel that something can be taken or lessons can be learned from the Labuan case?
Yeah, so we need to find out why Labuan's epidemic is under such good control now. When previously, late last year, it had the country's top incidence, top death rates. But now everything's under control, right? It has good indicators across board: testing, positive rate, incidence rate, mortality rate. It's all good. And Labuan has achieved that with 64% of their total population vaccinated to date. But then again, you have to compare: why is Labuan doing so well, but Sarawak is not? And Sarawak has fully vaccinated about 63% of their total population. Now, the main difference that I see, aside from population density, perhaps, the virus is being driven in Kuching, right now, which may have higher population density than Labuan, so that could explain the spread. But I think the kind of vaccines used could play a part as well. About 80% of Sarawak's population was vaccinated with Sinovac, compared to Labuan, where about 90% of their population used Pfizer. So the government perhaps needs to think about whether we should use booster jabs for those who got Sinovac.
There are two social economic issues that I want to ask you. The first is that we alluded to earlier in terms of the denominator, the number of people or the number of adults in Klang Valley. It's wrong for us to assume that we got the entirety of the adult population just because the number shows 110% of adults achieving a single dose. My suspicion is that we are getting 60 to 70% of total adults in Klang Valley, and that number has shown to be whatever the 110% comes to be totaled at. Is my suspicion correct that we are severely undercounting the number of adults in Klang Valley? What would be some of the data that would prove me wrong or correct in this sense?
Well, Ibrahim, I think the problem is that no one has the data, right? Because of the undocumented migrant worker population. Previous estimates say that there are about 2 to 4 million undocumented migrant workers in the country.
Yeah, that's a huge range. It's not 2.2 million to 2.4 million, it's 2 to 4.
Yeah, and of course, most of them will be based in the Klang Valley.
It's
really hard. I mean, without a proper estimate of the population, it's really hard to gauge the vaccine coverage in the Klang Valley. We are still early days now. Klang Valley's cases and deaths are slowly declining. Their hospitalization and ICU rates are also slowly declining. But I would still urge caution because Like I said, as we've seen in the case of Sarawak, despite extremely high vaccine coverage in Sarawak, Sarawak's epidemic is worsening rapidly. In the Klang Valley, it's getting better, but if we don't boost testing and contact tracing capabilities in the Klang Valley, and note that we still, the Klang Valley still has very high positive rates in the past epic week, August 22 to 28. So Selangor had, KL had about 11% positive rate, Selangor 17%. So we should use the time now in the Klang Valley to aggressively test more people so that we can try and control the outbreak a little better.
All right, which brings to or begs the question of the interministerial conversations, particularly one that is between the Home Ministry and the Health Ministry, because one of the main reasons why undocumented foreign workers don't want to come out is because of fear of repercussion. We've seen how they were taken, they were taken into trucks and brought into detention centres last year. When they have been given explicit guarantees that they won't be prosecuted, but they were persecuted. And now, even if there is an olive branch extended to them, there is a high level of suspicion from them to come up and be counted, and rightfully so, because, you know, once bitten, twice shy kind of thing. Do you feel that KJ now not only has to do his job as health minister, but also try to work with his compatriots and colleagues in the cabinet to try to tell them that now is not the time to be persecutory, now is the time to get people inoculated, and we need to inoculate, we're done with inoculating the citizens, we're now having to move towards the undocumented workers. Do you foresee some close collaboration between the health minister with the home minister on this topic?
Well, I hope so, Ibrahim. I really do. Because if we don't vaccinate our undocumented migrant worker population, refugees, and if we don't ensure that their living conditions are improved, then we will definitely see continuous outbreaks in the Klang Valley, despite high vaccine coverage among the Malaysian population, because the virus doesn't differentiate between local or foreigner. So I really do hope that KDN listens to KJ and allows undocumented migrant workers to be vaccinated without repercussion. I think what would help is if there were on-site PPVs rather than the standard PPVs, because we've seen a lot of xenophobic sentiment being expressed on social media when they saw long queues at the Bukit Jalil PPV. So that really doesn't help.
And that's disgusting, because these people just want to get vaccinated. That's why they turned up there. It's just, okay, dealing with xenophobia is another topic. I've got to book you for another time for that. But now I want to focus on the last topic of the day, which is an article that both you and Ngiu Hua Yi wrote earlier this week, which talks about the breakthrough cases following the data on GitHub that was made available to you guys, actually made available to all of us. Where it says that 18% of recent COVID-19 cases are from fully vaccinated individuals, and this is of course commonly known as breakthrough cases. Prior to having this interview, I was talking about this particular headline with another colleague of mine, and this colleague of mine reminded me that it might spook those that are vaccine hesitant to claim that the vaccines are not working, and therefore that's why there are up to 18% breakthrough cases, even when the positivity rates are high in some states over 25%. And that's why I want to approach this last topic with a little bit more nuance, with a little bit more caution. Could you tell us a little bit more about the breakthrough cases and what it means to those that are vaccinated, and more importantly, those that are still vaccine hesitant that have yet to be vaccinated?
A story on the rising rate of breakthrough cases in Malaysia simply shows that vaccines may not be able to totally prevent someone from getting infected with COVID and from transmitting that virus to someone else, whether it's another fully vaccinated person or an unvaccinated person. However, the Malaysian data shows quite clearly that the vaccines are very effective in preventing hospitalization and ICU admission. And those are really the crucial things that the public and the government should focus on. which is that vaccines protect us from falling severely ill or dying from COVID. As the data shows, among the about 68,000 plus vaccine breakthrough infections among fully vaccinated people in Malaysia, less than 2% required hospitalization. So that's a very good indicator. But I feel that the government also needs to improve its communications on vaccine breakthrough cases and focus and stop. So that means stop using terms like herd immunity because it confuses people. And when you have policies like vaccine passports that allow entry only for fully vaccinated people, that gives people a false sense of security that when you enter a place and you're in the company of only fully vaccinated people, you're safe from the disease. That's not entirely true. I mean, you would most likely be safe from falling severely ill or dying from the disease, but it doesn't mean that you cannot get infected. So this is where the dichotomy comes in. I mean, this is not a unique situation to Malaysia. The US is also facing the same problems in terms of communicating that the vaccines are effective in protecting us from severe disease, but they may not be totally protective against infection. Although, having said that also, if you are fully vaccinated, the chances of you getting infected in the first place is much lower than someone who's not vaccinated. It's a very tricky issue, but I feel that if the government clarifies its communications on it, then that would help persuade more people to get a jab. So it's individual protection, essentially, Ibrahim. It's about protecting ourselves, not so much about lending immunity to someone else who wasn't vaccinated.
You can learn more on this. Just go to codeblue.garlandcentre.org. There's plenty of news like this that can be found there. Of course, if you've missed any part of this interview, just head on to astrohourny.com. Look for Notepad, look for Sulin, or look for Code Blue. We will showcase all this information and showcase all this kind of conversations on these sites as well. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye. Sulin, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Ibrahim.